Okay. Gently bringing that to a close, looking around. If your eyes have been closed, look around the space you're in. Something simple like looking around can be very facilitative of feeling safe. It's partly to do with our nervous system, but that kind of with our head and neck, just moving our muscles and looking around and taking in the space helps us to orient. But also, yeah, if you're feeling a little bit uncertain or in any context, this is a really good thing to do. Look around, bit of movement. So, welcome to everyone. We've had a couple of arrivals. Welcome to our seminar on welcoming grief together. Yeah. Let's start with a quote. I want to start with a quote by Frances Weller. So I'll be speaking more about Frances Weller later. But this is kind of a wild quote to start our time together. Grief is subversive, undermining the quiet agreement to behave and be in control of our emotions. It is an act of protest that declares our refusal to live numb and small. There is something feral about grief, something essentially outside the ordained and sanctioned behaviors of our culture. Because of that, grief is necessary to the vitality of the soul. Contrary to our fears, grief is suffused with life force. It is not the state of deadness or emotional flatness. Grief is alive, wild, untamed, and cannot be domesticated. Put it in the chat. That's from Frances Weller's book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow. It is necessary to the vitality of the soul. That's an interesting line. So I'll let that quote hang there. We might come back to it, but I just want to just begin us with that. So today we're going to look at we're going to touch on a few different topics. I want to touch on a little bit about focusing for those who don't know it very briefly. I want to talk about our relationship to grief. I want to touch on what the body knows about all this. You know, what's the relationship between grief and the sort of body's knowing? I'm hoping we'll have time to look at the five gates of grief. This is five different kinds of grief that were formulated by Frances Weller, and we might talk a little bit about community processes around grief. We'll see how we get on. That's my intention so far. Can I just is anyone here new to focusing? And it's fine if you are. Just want to something. Yeah, okay. Yeah, a few people. Okay, great. I just want to give a little bit of context. So it's not really a full explanation, but just kind of to give that background. So in its essence, focusing is really about a way of being alive to our not our. Our inner knowing, our bodily knowing, our intuition, you could say, or sort of that, a life that's just beyond our thinking mind. Normally, we approach a lot of the world through our cognitive mind, and that gets us a long way, and it's great. But there's a whole lot that our body knows that we don't always take time to listen to. We don't know how to listen to. So, focusing is a way of opening that door to what the body knows. And it's something that, in fact, many people know already. You might know some of it already, but there is also a, so it's kind of, in a way, it's a human skill, but it's also a form that you can teach or have taught to you. And yeah, and there are many ways of practicing it. You could do it alone, you could do it in a partnership. That's a very common form of it, like a dyad partnership. It can be combined with other things. Often it might be combined with counseling or psychotherapy or body work or. So it kind of shows up in all sorts of parts of that world as well. Yeah, and it's the main skill. It's the main skill I teach. That's my vocation is teaching focusing to groups and one to one. And in I suppose what led me to this topic is in that process over the years, one of the big things I've learned and seen is when we open our awareness to what's in the body, what comes is grief. You know, it's like the most one of the most regular visitors. It's like it sort of somehow lives beneath the kind of normal radar of our mind, and it's sort of if you like, don't tell it, it's literally, but it sort of kind of lives in the body, really. It lives at that level, So when you open up the door, taught the body knows. It's really not unusual for one of the things to come is unacknowledged grief. Just a little bit about focusing, and there may be more time for questions, but that kind of gives you a bit of a sense of the practice and kind of the connection to this theme. Okay. I'm going to share an image with you. I want to just touch on this topic around grief really first. But first, one way into this is I'm going to share an image, or with my screen share actually, from a Google image search. So I've just literally typed grief into Google and pressed on images, and I'm going to show you my screen because I think images speak a lot, or more than words sometimes. So let me just share that screen. I'm just going to scroll down. I'm just going to see what you notice. So I'm going to share the screen. Do you see it? Can you see it? Yeah, great. So I just want to just I'll just kind of gently kind of scroll down and just notice how many images are people on their own. Nearly all these images that come around grief. Obviously, not all of them. Some of them are more kind of nature images, and but nearly every if there's a person in it, it's nearly always on their own. You see that? I think it's kind of striking, that this is our usual. There's one that isn't there. I think it's a surprise. But our usual sort of picture or sense of grief is something that we bear alone. I'll just stop sharing that. So it goes on. You keep scrolling. It just goes on and on. And occasionally you see like maybe two people, but mostly it's just single figures on their own. I think that shows us something about our relationship, our collective relationship with grief. At least one aspect of it is it's something we have to bear alone. And partly why I'm here is to try and break that down a little bit, to offer a different alternative. But I want to maybe invite you for now just to reflect for a little bit on what makes it hard for you to connect with grief. So, what makes it hard for you to connect with it? And it could be any kind of grief. I'm not necessarily speaking of just a death of loved ones. It could be losing a job, or even the current pandemic situation has a lot of loss in it, not just people's lives, but a whole way of being we might have been used to. Grief has many, many strands in our life, but I'm just curious, like what makes it hard for you to connect to it? Or maybe you could be the kind of person that actually flows quite easily through, but I'm curious, if it's hard for you, then what makes it hard? Any questions you can speak? If you don't want to speak, put it in the chat, that's also okay. What's your relationship to grief? Is it something you can easily welcome, or is it something that you find tricky? Yeah, it depends. Exactly. Yeah. Of course, it depends on what it is. Yeah. Hi, Steve. You just joined us. Welcome. Other people's opinions. Yeah. Would it be right to ask a bit more about that? Judy, if you would be willing to speak. You don't have to, you could chat, or you could. Oh, can you unmute yourself, Trudy?
I think, sometimes sort of everyone's got their own opinions, and sometimes they will give you their opinions and
Right, yeah,
let
exactly.
you actually reflect on your own grief.
Yeah.
Can stop you sometimes.
Yeah, thanks. Exactly. Yeah, that's right. It's like other people's advice or opinions or what they think you should be feeling or shouldn't. All sorts of things can come in, can't they? When we share some grief with somebody, it's not necessarily going to be welcomed in the way we want it to be. Yeah, thanks for saying that. Exactly. I'm just going to read some of the other comments. Yeah, sense of loss. It's hard to be with. That's right. Connecting. Yeah, so it's painful. Yeah, there's painful. Like, it's painful, isn't it? Like, sort of physically, emotionally, it's pain is hard to be with. That's right. Things that were unexpected, never saw coming. Yeah, exactly. Many strands of grief and events get in one. Yeah. Events get one in a certain mind and emotional states and body states too. Yeah. Do many strands of grief come together there? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
exactly. So they can also, they can get woven in together. Makes me anxious. Yeah, particularly when complicated. So yeah, it has a lot, I suppose what I'm also sensing here is it brings a lot of things with it. You know, grief isn't, it's like other, it kind of is like, what's the word? Tangled, let's say, in lots of other responses within ourselves and with other people. So we might be anxious about it. We might be scared of it. Yeah. Regret, anger. So it's not something we can very easily, I don't think, welcome. Just like, it's like as if it was a... someone knocks at a door, you know, some guests, let's say some experiences, you can, they knock on the door of our life. We can let them in and go, okay, yeah, have a place, you know. Grief is generally not so easily welcomed. If we find it a troublesome guest, let's say, if that metaphor makes sense. Part of me does not know what to do with it. Yeah, exactly. And emotions can be, yeah, can be, yeah, powerful, the minefield, if one does not know how to handle these. So yeah, I want to share with you, let's just pause here. I'm going to share with you a little skill from focusing, that, you know, it's just a part, I mean, it's a really tiny little piece of the whole practice, so but I want to share it with you here because I think it might help us in some of our relating to grief. There's much more to it than this, but it's a way of framing, a way of seeing our emotional experience that might help us. So I'm going to take an example from what you said, or from my own experience of focusing, which would be, I'm scared of what I'll feel. I'm sure many people can relate to that around grief. I'm scared it'll be too much, or I'm scared, I don't want to feel it. You know, that's a kind of very, very, or anxious about feeling it. It's kind of a typical thing that gets kind of so tangled in with it. So I'm going to invite you to listen to these two sentences and just hear the difference. So I'm going to give you two ways of saying that and to see if you can feel a kind of qualitative difference. Almost like let these sentences like go into your body and see what happens. Yeah? So the first sentence would be, yeah, like, I feel scared, dot, dot, dot. Don't even finish the end of that sentence. Just let the words drop in a little bit. I feel scared of. And just let the feel of it just gather for a moment. No, not too much, obviously, because it might get a bit more than we want, but just touch on it. I feel scared. And then say to yourself, instead of that, say, oh, something in me feels scared. Some part of me feels scared of. Let's see what. Happens there inside. See if there's a difference. Maybe not. Maybe there is. Something in me feels scared. And see if, yeah, I'm just curious. Do you feel a difference? It could be, the word could be anxious there, couldn't it? It could be, I feel anxious. Something in me feels anxious. And yeah, see if only what you notice. Okay, yeah, makes it less overwhelming. Thanks, Cheryl, yeah. Any other sense of difference? Some, yeah. Some nodding there. Alison? Well, I can't hear you for some reason, Alison. You are unmuted, but...
Tell you why I lifted that up.
Okay, okay, that was it, yeah.
Oh, that would help.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I was noticing the sort of much more all over feel of I feel scared. So it was like in my arms and chest, it was really quite all over.
Right.
And then something in me really sort of came much more here. And then I started to sort of get a sense of it as well. You know, beginnings of like, oh, what this might, you know, I mean, it's an exercise, but it would be like, oh, what I might be scared of.
Yeah, right.
Right now, what's going on in my life right now? Yeah.
Yeah, the particularity of it. Yeah, thanks. So it shifted your sense in your body of it, but also it became a bit clear, in a way, a bit clearer what was happening.
Yeah, great. And it was really good to sort of just notice it in the body, actually, take the words right.
Yeah. Right in. Yeah.
See what they feel like.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Sees it's like a shuffling. There are lots of books on the shelf, not just Fear. Nice. I love that image. So it's like, yeah, sometimes we sort of fall into one book, the Book of Fear, and we don't notice there are lots of other things happening, you know, particularly with fear and anxiety. Those two tend to take over quite easily. Latter's just that being scared is only a part of the range of possible feelings. Yeah. Thanks, Haruk. Yeah, exactly. It's just similar kind of image to that book's. It's like there's many, more than one thing going on. Yeah, I mean, yeah, fear is also, yeah, I mean, I'm touching on a big topic here, Nicole, exactly, yeah. So there's a lot of range of it.
It's a big subject.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, there's a lot there, yeah. So, but this is one way of working, or of sort of one, this idea of feeling that we might have things around, or let's say things that come when grief comes, other parts of us, I think is very helpful for me at least. Parts of us that might be scared, parts of us that might be worried about what we will happen. Parts of us that might be concerned will get overwhelmed. So they're really to be listened to. You know, they're really things to be welcomed as well. So I'm not saying, oh, these are just, you should just ride past these. In a sort of philosophy of focusing, everything is welcome. And we know we have parts of us to protect us from overwhelming feelings. And they're really welcome. They need to be listened to as well. So nothing needs to be pushed away here. This is a big kind of space of welcoming. But this tool, this kind of... movement from being identified with something to being with it is a key kind of step towards welcoming grief. Is that we welcome the parts of us that feel scared. I'm just going to get a little, or that don't want to feel it. There's a little part. Just to show you, there's a part of me that feels scared, and we go, some part of me feels scared. I feel scared. It feels like all of me. Some part of me. It's a part of me. And you can feel a bit like Alison said, that you can feel more the particularity of it. And just pausing there. So yeah, maybe I would say here, collectively, we find it hard to welcome it. We've found ourselves in a place, I'm not sure how we ended up here, but that many of us are scared of it, or have parts of us that are scared of it. Collectively, we sort of find it hard to welcome. So it kind of ends up living in the shadows, this aspect of our experience. Grief gets hidden away. We don't want to talk about it. We think it's not going to be welcomed, or it might not be welcomed when we actually do try and talk about it. But at the same time, you know, it's very essential part of our lived experience. Like at the beginning, going back to that quote, it's something about, how does he say it again? Necessary to the vitality of the soul. You know, it's like not just a little feeling that we should sort of some are put aside. It's somehow very essential, I think. So at the same time as it's hard to welcome, it's also something very essential. Needed part of a human experience. So I just want to touch on a little bit about this whole topic of what the body knows, about this bit more about this for a while, and just speak a bit more about it. About this idea that the body knows something. And when I was researching for this, around this topic, I'd looked up around how animals grieve. So that was very interesting. Other animals, well, as far as we can tell, have some kind of process that looks like grieving. Elephants, cetaceans, apes, the horses, dogs, even something happens around when they're with their young or other members of their community that have died that looks like grief in some shape or form. I thought that was really interesting. It's not just a human experience. Elephants in their herd will kind of stop if they come across a corpse of another elephant and sort of take it in. They spend some time there. They don't just rush past it. They take it in. When I go for a walk with my dog, as a family, there's three of us in our family and the dog. And when one of us goes off, the dog gets quite upset and kind of is always looking around and a bit kind of unsettled. She knows something's missing, basically. She knows there's something, somebody's missing, somebody, and she finds it really difficult in her body. She articulates this through kind of running around or barking or like. So I think this word missing is really interesting. It's like the body knows something is missing. The body knows, like even if at a cognitive level you're saying, no, it's everything, everything's fine, it's okay. Rationally we can tell ourselves that all things change or whatever story we have on this level, the body always feels that sense of missing if something has been lost. It just knows that on some level. You don't have to ask it. It knows that something is missing. You can think about it. Sometimes you have this when you have a sort of a gathering and somebody's not there and they're supposed to be there. And you just feel it. Even if it's a large gathering, you think someone's missing. We know it on some instinctive bodily level. So this points to a kind of bodily knowing that is really, I think, kind of almost like pre or preconceptual, you could say, or underneath our normal level of awareness. And so any kind of missing is kind of registered on that bodily level. It could be the loss of a person, but it's also the loss of other kinds of losses we experience in our life. It could be a sense of loss around what we really need to feel healthy. I suspect many of us are feeling this at the moment around lockdown. Our normal access to connections with people, or contact or context, to being held, to free flow of communication, all sorts, so many strands of our life are unavailable to us. This is what I'm feeling at the moment. Are missing, are not there, and our body registers that. Does that make sense to people? Especially at the moment, we feel it, especially over time. Yeah, loss of independence, loss of contact, right now, exactly. Maybe initially, something I found in the first lockdown in March. I noticed this a bit less, but now, this far in, it's like more and more, all those strands that are normally there, I feel like kind of the loss of them quite physically almost. So I just want to pause. Yeah, just pause at that moment, just around if that kind of notion makes sense of what the body knows, what's missing. That's so far. Any questions want to come around that?
Peter, it's more. Hi everyone. It's more like a feeling I'm having now. I was not aware of it at the beginning of the group, but now it's kind of my body split in two parts from my sternum under. There is nothing, and it's very tight in here. It's actually what happened when I've lost I mean, my chest has always been stronger and bigger since my brother died when I was young, because my breathing stopped here. So I could never connect to anything deeper. And right now I'm looking at the group and I'm thinking about the whole situation, and it's a kind of, because grief is pervasive, you know, and affects the whole field. So I'm thinking also us as a group now.
Yeah, sure.
I'm looking at the faces and say, there is so much potential for connection. And I'm hearing your voice, which is, you know, you're saying such important things, but I'm hearing the loss of other people's voices.
Sure.
And this chat is kind of becoming, can we stop chatting? Can we start talking?
Oh, yeah, please, yeah.
Can I hear some air coming out of our lungs and all of that?
You want to hear some other voices.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm hearing, I was looking at this, I said, oh my God, what kind of masochist am I, kind of, not during the lockdown, to go in a group where we are chatting, and I'm sort of saying, how am I creating this? So that's why I wanted to speak.
Great, thank you. No, I appreciate that. I mean, and also speaking and being heard is so important in this process, isn't it?
I also hear that you're holding a lot for us.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say, maybe, you know, there's something that we are doing in what are we losing?
Yeah, it's through not speaking.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So it's an invitation, and thank you for speaking, and also an invitation to speak too. When we have these, because there'll be moments when I am speaking just me, and there'll be moments when we pause, and I'll be inviting your input. So yeah, it'd be lovely if you could also speak too in that.
Could I just say something as well?
Please,
related. Sometimes on Zoom, it feels like we're all in these little boxes, and it's. I think some people really relate to that quite easily. You know, that they prefer it almost, but some of us really miss the interaction, you know, the physical interaction, face-to-face thing with others. I mean, I hated Zoom to start with. I've got a bit more used to it, but there's something about just allowing myself to be myself rather than, because sometimes in a group too, you're jabbing in to get your voice heard, or it feels like if it's a smaller group. And I don't like that either. So it's finding a way with Zoom that allows for a free flow conversation, really.
That's right. Yeah. It has its limitations, Zoom, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we kind of gotten more used to it collectively, but I can really feel its limitations and constraints too in this kind of environment.
For me, I can see everything that people are saying, and it's true, people cannot speak all the time, and people need a break sometimes to speak. So we listen to you, and when time comes, I'm sure everybody will get a chance to say something, because I think they need to be heard.
Yeah, I mean, we all, exactly, and that's part of what we're looking at today, exactly. Is you know, in a way, let's say grief is a voice that hasn't been heard very often in us. It's not been welcomed. Even in us, but in collectively. Good, thanks everyone. Let's bear that in mind next time we have a pause for speaking. Let's bring in our voices. That's good. I want to talk a little bit about containers, this concept of containers around grief, just to take us to the next piece. So this is an idea that I came across through Francis Weller. And he talks about grief is I wouldn't even call it a feeling, but grief is a process or an aspect or experience that needs both containment and release. So it needs two things. Just putting in a chat here, there's two words, containment and release. So on the one hand, it needs to flow like a river, but it also needs containing at the same time. So the trouble is, it's quite difficult for one person to do that. How can you be a better container and release at the same time? This is why carrying grief alone is very hard, because we can't do both at the same time very easily. You can do some of it. There is a sense you can it's not like completely impossible, but I think there are limitations to it. So for me, at least, what I've discovered is grief needs some kind of container. Now, that container could come in many forms. could be just a good friend who you're speaking to, who just allows you to feel it without, you know, this is one of our tough difficulties, without opinions, without advice, without trying to make you feel better, even just a kind of company, simple listening. This is actually quite difficult to find sometimes, someone just hearing you without offering some kind of opinions or their story, and especially around grief, it's quite hard. But yeah, but there is a potential of that in a friendship and a connection. But another great container, another kind of container I really appreciate, is a focusing partnership. So for those of you who don't know and haven't had this experience, you may not know what this feels like. But it's a very, in focusing, there's a beautiful opportunity to just be heard by somebody. Heard not just of what we're thinking, but hear what we're feeling, hear what we're really, what our body's saying, what our body knows, and in the focusing partnership, the other person just hears that without interfering. They don't get in the way. They don't offer advice. They don't try and make you feel better. They just hold it in empathy. It's a really beautiful container. So it's another kind of container. So you've got something holding it, let's say grief is a river or water, then it can flow. Another third kind of container, which I'll just mention, is, I guess, kind of group, some kind of groups, listening circles. I've been running grief ceremonies, so this is a kind of particular form of holding where grief is welcomed in a community. And this is one of the models from Francis Rella and his sharings that I really appreciated. So his work and research and life has really experienced that in a lot of indigenous cultures, they have ceremonies where grief is welcomed regularly. And every month, you know, every week maybe, you might have a ceremony, some kind of grief ceremony where grief is welcomed collectively. I found this really fascinating when I first came across it, or more than that, more compelling, like, wow. Like, there's an opportunity regularly where we can have our grief witnessed and held. And, you know, whether that's really profound deep grief at a loss of someone, or just sadness at something, I mean, maybe not, it's just any kind of sadness and sorrow could be welcomed in that space. So that's another whole topic. Is kind of how another kind of container is ceremony, or just groups, kind of like the community. Again, it feels really quite a big leap to believe that that's possible, that my grief would be welcomed in a community, that people would be want to be around that. You know, I think it's quite a big hard jump for many of us. But what I've experienced so far is actually it's been really a relief to have a space where I've really been able to let my sorrow and sadness, and that could come in the form of anger as well, be seen, just be welcomed as it is, without anybody doing anything to it, even me doing anything to it, really. It's just like letting a river flow, give it a place where it can flow. And it's been such a relief. So I'll just pause there, this idea of containers and containment. And again, any questions around that? Yeah, please speak and notice what's happening in you as I say this, what you're noticing in your body. Questions?
Just a little comment from me, I suppose. Steve, yeah, like, just that sounds really beautiful, like the idea of bringing like your true authentic self to a space,
yeah,
like with other people who are in that mindset, who are able to provide that just sounds like a wonderful thing, and like it would be really helpful. Really, really beneficial.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. No, I mean, I that's how I found it. Very beneficial. Yeah, it's like a missing piece almost. Yeah, for me, it was a missing piece.
Yeah, it sounds very resonant to like process groups and things like that. Like, you know, more general, but really, really transformational. So useful.
Yeah, exactly. So,
interesting.
Yeah. Amanda?
The last year or two lost my mother and my wife, and it feels like, you know, because grief's not so evident in our culture, I feel like I'm so unprepared for the feeling and as if I had no idea this would be here, and why did nobody tell me a bit more, you know, that my life would just turn upside down. And I think if grief had been part of everyday life and we've seen that in cultures and the complexities as well, because the books also I find are like all about the love of the lost person, and there's often so much complexity, anger, hatred towards people, love, you know, and it does feel like we miss a part of ourselves when grief's not part of our culture.
Yeah, thanks so much, Amanda. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, I can relate myself. Oh yeah, what started my focusing journey was loss of my mum at that. So that was whenever it was, 15 years ago. Yeah, I felt very similar, sort of, but like I was not prepared at all. Nobody, in fact, nobody around me really knew what to say or do or anything. They were like, oh, you might feel sad for a bit. And that was it. That was pretty much the only advice I got. You know, like, what's that? So unprepared, yeah. And yeah, it's so, like, what was there was so, I don't know. Can't think of a word for it. It's so needed. It's more than that. It's so needed more than that. Yeah. Hi, Floor, please.
Hi, Peter. Hey, everybody. I think that what I remember, like, in the worst moments in my life, when I had, like, terrible losses, for me, it's very hard, like, to find people with whom I can talk freely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
About my feelings, and that I can be received in a way that my feelings can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that is a very, very, very big challenge, like with whom to talk.
Yeah.
No, who gives you space? Who can listen to you? Who can That's be right. with you?
Yeah.
And I think it's a challenge because I think out there in the ordinary world, I don't know if we are so prepared.
Yeah.
Maybe like in the focusing community, or maybe some person can be very compassive or empathetic. But out there, you know, it's like people don't know what to say, or they will tell you what to do, or what you should feel. Or so it's and in those times, like I remember me, like I get into places that are extremely fragile and vulnerable. And so it's like a gigantic challenge.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a big, big challenge. That's right. Yeah. Like it's in a way what grief needs is something so simple, but we've had it for so, which is welcoming, but because it hasn't had that for so long, we've sort of become so used to hiding it away or not experiencing it that it's become this massive kind of chasm or challenge to welcome it. Maybe something I do want to notice, I want to say now, is the power of there's two things I think I want to say that might help us here. One is, I suppose, this comes out of Francis Weller's book. He talks about grief sometimes feeling bottomless. He uses the term bottomless, like it's, I don't want to go there because it's too big. So I just want to touch on that a little bit. And then I also want to talk about how you can work with it in very small ways, which is also important. So sometimes it feels like if we go there to our feelings of sadness, it will never stop crying, or it will never stop flowing. It's like, I don't want to go there because it's so huge that, so it almost like feels like this kind of bottomless pit. And in Francis Weller's book, A World of Sorrow, he talks about this quite a bit. And he says, it's funny how he says it. It feels bottomless because it's never been met. So when a feeling has never been met, it's never had an edge, it's never had a kind of, it's never been like held in a space, because it's never been held, if you see what I mean, because it's never been, I have to use one of my apps, like stone, it's like, because it's never been really welcomed fully, it sort of feels bottomless. Just you see how those feelings come together. It's like, so it kind of feels like it goes on forever, but that's actually not how it is. It's only because it's never been welcomed. So I find that really interesting. So if you provide a container for something, even if it's just a little bit, it's like it begins to assuage the feeling of endlessness of it, perhaps. Lisa, just reading your comment here, sitting in the far back. I feel now I'm trying over. Would it be okay to ask a bit more about what you mean then, Lisa? Yeah, if you unmute yourself, that'd be.
It's my father passed away 2 years ago. And after his passing away, I just had this regret of not being able to give him time. So what is happening to me now, my mom is not very well, and I am just kind of preparing myself to be ready for, which has not actually happened, but just that sense of I need to be prepared for it. And I mean, positive side of that is I'm giving much more time to my mom, I'm talking to her, I'm finding the space to chat to her, share things, you know, finding out what is it she's finding difficult. So I'm more in contact with my mother in this preparation for this grief, which is not, I mean, we don't know when and what is going to her, but so I'm just wondering, I feel like it's very useful for me to be ready, to be prepared in a good way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it sounds like you're because of your previous experience, you have some sense of preparation and knowing the landscape a little bit and getting ready for it. Exactly. Thank you. Anyone else? Was there another question there or comment around? Okay. So that was it. Now I remember. It was me who was going to say something. Now I remember what the missing piece was. So, yeah, so one was about welcoming, like, the bottomless feeling. But the other one was don't underestimate the power of small, tiny steps in this whole process. Because we think it's such a huge thing, but we never do anything about it. It's the trouble with many big, big topics. So like, well, it's so big and insurmountable that, well, I just might as well just forget about it. It's just too big. So we never do anything, which is a bit, which doesn't really allow a river to move at all. So what I'm going to share with you is it's even creating a little bit of acknowledgement can go a long way. So I'm going to share with you a ritual I did actually, which wasn't really even that sort of named particularly. It was just part of a training I was doing around play actually outdoors with children, but the guide had loads of bits of paper in the shape of leaves. He said, if you want, go into the forest and write a message on that leaf about to someone you've lost. You know, write a message to someone you've lost in your life that they might want to read. And you go out into the forest and you just tie this leaf in a tree. Because he was kind of modeling something he'd done with some children, and I thought, and we did this, and it was amazingly powerful. Just to name someone who'd lost, or write a little message to them, I miss you, hang it in a tree, and leave it in the forest. And I thought, wow, like suddenly, like it's a tiny bit of acknowledgement really allowed it to flow, or start to flow. So sometimes you just don't, it doesn't need to be a big thing at all. Just naming our sadness, naming what we've lost, even to yourself, right? Even to yourself. Or I've done some things where we just gather stones of people, of things we've lost, and put them in the river. Gather some stones, take them to the river with a friend, and just name some losses, you know. doesn't have to be a big elaborate thing. It's great to have company. Really nice to have some company when you do this, if you can get a friend to do it with. Even if you can't, have the land as company with you, landscape. And yeah, it's sort of, so it's something about small steps and honouring, you know, honouring our losses. Often we don't do that. So I wanted to, yeah, just really kind of underline the power of small steps in this. Yeah. So just because it's huge doesn't mean we can do nothing. We can do something. So again, yeah, just pause for a minute there. We're approaching the end, so I've got a little bit more time. But any questions that come?
Hi there. Can I speak?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I think not just for me, for everybody, there is a big connection between nature, healing, and grief.
Mm-hmm.
Because life and death are interconnected. There's no death without life. There's no life without death. And the fact that you're talking about leaves. Leaves die in the autumn. Leaves grow back in the spring. So there's a dance of life and death in that.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I think you know a lot about that. I think I know something. I know other people here in the group might know. But yeah, I think nature is a big step. And rivers too, you know, the fact that you mentioned rivers and flow and banks and containment. Even rivers are contained within banks. There is a containment for them.
Yeah,
so our
yeah.
grief is like a river that is a containment somewhere for that grief or somehow, whether it's in nature or community or whichever way to feel it, sense it and look at it. So yeah, any of that kind of connection on nature and grief, ritual, community and care, I think, because at this time people don't feel the care, not just about workshop in particular, but because of the crucial and difficult times we live in, there's not enough care and action and community. People started to realize that they're trying to do it, but I think there's more need for it.
Yeah,
and nature
yeah.
is a crucial step.
I agree. Yeah, no, nature has a lot to offer us. Yeah, yeah. I like that image of the river and the bank, you know, exactly. And this is a great image for containment. You know, a river needs a bank for it to flow through a landscape. It needs that kind of containment. So, yeah, thank you.
And also remember that the river flows into something. It just goes into a lake or into a sea, to an ocean, and eventually that gets transformed into vapors or steam or clouds. It's always a dance. It's always a process. So the grief also flows the same way. It appears static to start with, but as it flows and dissolves, it can magically transform into something else. It's never the same thing, you know, over a period of a lifetime, I suppose.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, what comes there is that if we don't allow something to flow, it can't change. I mean, this is you know, and if we keep it hidden or if there's no way of it to move, that's where the trouble comes in, like the river can't flow. That's what we're talking about here. Yeah,
I know, but that's what people do to start with. And once they discover that they can change, then it starts to flow.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, aware of time. I just want to touch on, we haven't really got time to go into it fully, but I touch on a little bit of the topics I'm going to be exploring on a course that's coming up. I'd encourage you to read Rasi Sweller's book, really. So I just want to just mention, he in his book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow, should I put it in the type it here? He talks about the five gates of grief, which really helped for me when I came across this. It, like, suddenly it was like somebody was speaking a language that my body knew already. So he talks about different kinds of, if you like, different kinds of grief that we all carry. And one of them, you know, one of the five great gates is what we would normally expect would be the loss of people we love, you know. So that's one of, but it's only one of five. So the first gate, he says, is that everything we love we will lose. This is that the loss of people in our lives. But there are four other gates. So there's other gates around parts of us that haven't known love. There's another place as well. Another kind of grief we have is that we've lost touch with parts of ourselves. Or another kind of sorrow we carry is the sorrows of the world. You know, the world is suffering, you know, particularly at the moment, but even before the pandemic, social injustice or habitat loss or extinction of animals, or you know, there's so many other kinds of sorrows in the world, and that impacts on our body. Our body feels that. And he also names a kind of grief of what does he, how does he word it? He says what we expected but did not receive. This is fascinating, this idea that we feel the missing of what we should have had when we were children, for example. You know, we should have had warm connection, we should have had welcoming, you know, we should have had perhaps stories and song and community, and but because we didn't have that, we feel a sense of missing. So he really names that. And then he talks about ancestral grief as well. This unacknowledged sorrow of our ancestors. You know, so there's a lot there in all of those, but I just wanted to mention them because he kind of lays out a landscape, I suppose. And that landscape is something we explore on the course I offer. So I offer this course twice a year. And it's for people who know focusing currently, so those who know the practice, know how to do the paired partnership. And yeah, and it's really opening up that landscape much more fully, and really inviting the body to show us what it knows about those different gates. Like what does it feel? And those gates are kind of a framework. They're not the only way of looking at grief. It's just a good kind of structural framework, and they really point to something that's true. But it also goes beyond that as well. So yeah, there's two. I just want to mention the two courses coming up. So one is on March the 2nd. And it's in the daytime. In fact, I think it's on a month's time, or 3 weeks. Let me just check. Yeah, 3 weeks' time. So that's a 7-week course in the daytime, but there's also one in the evening later in the year for those who can't make daytime. So that's, I think, it's on my website, and I can't remember the date. Excuse me. Just quickly look it up. Oh yeah, it's on the Tuesday evening, starting later in the year, November the 2nd. So two different courses there. Really open, using focusing to kind of welcome and explore this whole landscape of grief. What else? Point in the direction of that book. That book is great. It's a really good introduction to grief and also community grief ceremonies. Some great ideas at the end of that book around how you might even do your own small ceremony with people. It's great, very good resources. If you want to know more about focusing and how that can help, you know, the kind of container of two, I can send you some more information about that, because that's another place that grief can be welcomed. Yeah, maybe we've got enough time for like one or two quick questions at the end before we finish. If there are any.
Your link to the 2nd of March event to PayPal is not working.
Oh, okay.
So I tried to do that. It's not working. And I don't know if other people have experienced that.
Okay. I'll check it out and see if I can fix that. Yeah. Thanks for letting us know. Yeah, sometimes things don't go right on my website. Okay, good. I'll leave it there. So thanks for joining us. Appreciate your coming and sharing. And actually, Martin, well, let's end. If you don't mind, have another 30 seconds. I'd like to end with something. Something for the body. If you have to go, please go. But sometimes it's nice to end. So putting your hand on an invitation to put your hand on your heart and hand on your belly. Sit yourself in your chair and really feel your body being supported. Don't close your eyes. Don't have them open. And just look around. But with this contact with yourself. And take a few breaths here. Just hold, like while you are holding yourself. And just acknowledging your body. If there's something moving in you that's been stirred by what we've said today, let it know you're there. So just giving some kind awareness to your body, sensing your whole body as you sit there. Yeah, and taking care of yourself as you go into your day. If any questions come from what I said, please get in touch. Aside from that, I'll see some of you in the future. Great. Thanks, everyone.
I need to ask you something.
Okay.
Before you go. before, it's not to do with a group. I've booked some things on your pages. How do I talk to you about it?
Great. Oh, well, I'll be in touch later, so I'll sort out
that. Okay.
Thanks, then.
Thank you.
See you later. Bye. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.